Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Senior debt correspondent, senior weapons analyst, senior racist correspondent, senior racialist correspondent. Wyatt Cenac has taken many tags as fake reporter correspondent for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He's a comedy writer for the show, a correspondent, and a stand-up comedian in his own right with his own angle, racially and every other way, on life in these United States. This hour On Point comedian Wyatt Cenac of The Daily Show. You can join the conversation. Is Wyatt your reporter, your correspondent, your kind of comedian? Does his humor speak to you? Does it speak for you? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. He's out with a new DVD version of his special Wyatt Cenac Comedy Person. We'll hear from him in just a moment. A little bit from Wyatt Cenac on The Daily Show. Libya is on its way to being free of Muammar Gaddafi, we're told. But back in April, it was a different story. Here's Wyatt Cenac reporting for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Gaddafi's been fired, and he keeps showing up for work. He's the George Costanza of dictators, John.
Wyatt, I don't want to say anything, but it appears Gaddafi's palace has caught fire.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll just rationalize that as the warm glow of the people's love.
Yeah. He's somewhat in denial, isn't he?
Wyatt Cenac and Jon Stewart, not all the troubles are in Tripoli. This past March, Vice President Joe Biden's staff forced a reporter into a storage closet during a fundraiser event. On The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, it appeared that correspondent Wyatt Cenac suffered a similar fate.
Wyatt, where are you right now?
I think the Nixon boiler room. It's where they keep us in between press conferences.
What possible reason would the White House have for putting you there and handcuffing you? That's just...
I guess to keep us from getting information they might deem embarrassing or relevant.
You know, you sound like you're okay with this. Like, it doesn't...
Hey, man, this is a lifestyle. They have information. We desperately need the information. We beg for the information. So they give us a taste, but then they take it away like the cruel mistresses they are.
And how's he going to be introduced? You never know. Here's Jon Stewart introducing what writer and correspondent Wyatt Cenac on The Daily Show last summer.
We're joined by our senior racist correspondent, Wyatt Cenac.
It's... racialist, senior racialist correspondent.
Joining me now from New York City is Wyatt Cenac, stand-up comedian, film actor, and correspondent and writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He starred with Tracy Higgins in the 2008 indie film Medicine for Melancholy, directed by Barry Jenkins. His new Comedy Central special, Wyatt Cenac, Comedy Person, is just out on DVD. Wyatt Cenac, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Do you set it up with John in advance, every little thing? Did you know he was going to introduce you as senior racist correspondent?
Yeah, we knew beforehand. We usually come in around 9 and start working on the day's show around 9, 9:30. So that was something that morning we were figuring out how we were going to cover that. And those were some jokes that came up in the morning meeting. And then I think myself and another writer went off to write that, and we usually rehearse it around 3:30 and put it in front of an audience by about 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Got a great laugh. I guess that's a win. And went to the kind of ambiguity of your, or kind of uncategorizability of your persona there. What's the difference between being that fake reporter, Wyatt, on Comedy Central, The Daily Show, and your stand-up routine, which you also did on Comedy Central, Wyatt Cenac, Comedy Person, but there you're all on your own. Are those different continents, different worlds entirely? What's same? What's different?
They're slightly different worlds. The Daily Show, so much of what our show is satirizing the 24-hour news networks, looking at politics, finding funny things, primarily in those worlds. For me as a stand-up, I'm not as interested or concerned with politics as we are on the show. So for me, it's a lot more looking at things like social issues or just weird things that have happened in my life. So I don't really have an outlet on The Daily Show to perhaps talk about what other silly things, you know, fart jokes and all that stuff, those stay off The Daily Show, and I can do those in stand-up.
Free on the stage, that must be such a relief to be able to do those on stage.
Yeah.
Oh, at last. Your mother must be
there
so proud.
There is a huge demand for fart jokes.
Talk to us about the racial angle here. I've read you saying, look, I'm not here to be a black comedian. You're not exactly directly in that lineage. You don't even necessarily work in a realm that translates straight over. If you show up for a, you know, Def Jam comedy show, as prominent as you have made yourself in other realms, you may not slide straight into that scene. Do these intersect?
To me, they do. I don't think that it's necessarily that you don't fit in one world or another, or that I couldn't do a Def Jam show versus an alternative comedy show. For me, the track that I was always on was the quote-unquote alternative track. I think at the end of the day, I am who I am. I am a comedian. I'm a man. I'm black. I'm from the South. I have all of those things that I speak to. So for me to just isolate it as one thing, I think that limits who I am as a comedian, but also limits my audience and kind of takes my audience for granted. That who's to say a Def Jam audience doesn't want to see, you know, somebody who's white. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of people in that audience that love Louis C.K. And mm-hmm. that's not to say that Louis C.K. is a Def Jam comic, but I don't think that he really thinks about sort of putting himself in one category or another. I think it's become very, very easy to do that sometimes with minority comedians, because the first thing you see is, oh, you see the color of their skin and you kind of judge them. Are they a black comic, or what are they if they're not what I expect them to be?
I want to look at whether it's possible to get beyond that, signs that maybe we're getting beyond it in your new DVD. This is from the Comedy Central show, Wyatt Cenac, comedy person. You've got this bit on growing up in Dallas, growing up black.
When I was growing up, there was all this pressure to be black. Like, maybe not if you were Chinese, but for me, it was something I felt. And you had to fit this idea of what black was, so you had to, like, you had to do snaps, and you had to play basketball, and you had to love hip-hop, and maybe at some point, you applied to be in the Crips. Like, you didn't have to get in, but at least they have your resume on file.
They have your resume on file, and hear a little bit more from that segment, recalling a couple of high school friends who used to have snap competitions, kind of wisecrack competitions, telling your mama jokes back and forth.
So they'd snap on each other, and then whenever they got bored for fun, they'd snap on me, because the best I could ever do was like, well, your mom's so dumb, she didn't graduate high school, and has therefore had to work menial job after menial job to provide for you and your family. I guess it's not really a slam as much as a story of triumph.
From Wyatt Cenac, comedy person, the Comedy Central special, the DVD, just out this week. Wyatt Cenac is with us from New York. Wyatt, so with The Daily Show, with Jon Stewart, are you beyond all that? Have you reached the Valhalla of comedy where, you know, we're in the new multicultural America, you're just a smart, funny guy in colors history?
No. It's never that easy. It's funny because sometimes if people see me walking down the street, they'll stop me and they'll be like, oh, you're the senior black correspondent on The Daily Show. And that's actually Larry Wilmore. That's a specific role that he does where he comes in, you know, once or twice a month and sort of skewers that thing that you see on news networks where they're talking about a black issue. So they sort of pull out the black correspondent that they happen to keep in the basement, and, you know, they sort of pull him out and sit him down next to Wolf Blitzer, and they're like, you know, what do you think? And he says what he thinks, and then they're like, all right, great, go back down to the basement. And he goes down there with the Latino correspondent, the Asian correspondent, and the gay correspondent, and they all hang down there. And so I think that's what Larry does. When I was hired, for me, they just brought me on as a correspondent. They said, we wanted you to be a correspondent and a writer, and not everything that you talk about is a race-based mm-hmm. thing. And some things you might talk about because you have that perspective, in the same way that someone who's Jewish has the perspective of being Jewish that they can speak to in a unique way and in an informed way that maybe I can't speak to.
So when you're putting a show together and in the process, the creative process, however that goes, we'll talk about that. What gets thrown at you is a race joke that night. Is that a moment when you roll your eyes and say, oh boy, oh great, here we go again? Or, I mean, you do a lot of other things as well. So are you fine with it?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a joke being thrown at me. I'm aware of everything that's mm-hmm. going on.
Sure.
We, like I said, we start our day at 9. So mm-hmm. if there's something that has happened over the course of the day, I think right before we went on break, we did something about how Ed Schultz on MSNBC had gone on a bit of a rant about Texas Governor Rick Perry and kind of said that Rick Perry had made a statement that was racially insensitive about President Obama.
Because he had said the period that there was a black cloud hanging over the economy, the country, whatever.
Exactly. And so he had said, oh, there's a black cloud hanging over the country, and that black cloud is our debt. And Ed Schultz kind of clipped it in a way that he could play it and come out of the clip saying that black cloud that Rick Perry is talking about is President Obama. And it was a very sort of strange thing to do that. And so for me, seeing that, I think I kind of worked on pitching that bit. And so to me, that's how we look at things. It's never like, oh, we're going to do a black thing, call up Wyatt. It's always, we're looking at a bunch of stuff.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Daily Show correspondent and writer Wyatt Cenac about life and work in the Jon Stewart world and his new Comedy Central special, Wyatt Cenac, Comedy Person, just out on DVD this week. He joins us today from New York. Wyatt, lots of response for you online. Eric says, Wyatt's one of my favorite anchors on The Daily Show. Simply Monica says, obviously so smart, and what a dry wit. Brandy says, Wyatt is hilarious. Even my cynical husband laughed till he was red-faced at the special. Love from the ladies there, Wyatt. And
thank you.
Yeah,
thank you, ladies. Thank you, Eric.
Yeah. And that exchange around Ed Schultz, this was you and Jon Stewart. This was last week. Rick Perry, the Republican governor of Texas, talked about the debt ceiling as a black cloud. Earlier this month, Republican Congressman Doug Lamborn of Colorado had used the phrase tar baby around President Obama. Wyatt Cenac said there was an even bigger problem beyond these two. Talking with Daily Show correspondent John Oliver, joined in to back him up. Here's Cenac clarifying the whole picture for Jon Stewart.
John, tar baby's a term that can't be misinterpreted. Black cloud, it's commonly used as a metaphor. The real bigot is Ed Schultz.
Right. Wait, what now?
Yeah. Ed Schultz, John, has a long, disgusting history of using racially charged language.
Speculation is the red herring.
Red herring? What's he saying about Native American people?
Oh! Oh, so Native Americans are herrings to him? Just fishy, untrustworthy people?
Yeah, that need to be caught and fed to our government penguins?
Yeah.
Guys, I think that's a reach. I don't think that's...
Is it?
Is it, John? Is it really a reach?
Is it really a reach?
Is it really a reach, John?
John Oliver, Jon Stewart, and Wyatt Cenac there talking about race, the presidency, Rick Perry, black clouds, penguins, tar baby, you name it. How on earth does something like that come together, Wyatt? I mean, is that really fully scripted in advance? You must be jumping off there, the script at the end with the is it, or not?
That was John Oliver and I improvising a little bit. But for the most part, it's all, when we're doing anything in the studio like that, we have to write it out and figure it all out because so much of it is also dependent on the work that our segment producers do, who are often sometimes the unsung heroes of our show. They're the people who put together those montages and sit with the editors and really kind of help us frame the story and give it a context. I think a lot of people will say when you meet them on the street, oh, I get all my news from The Daily Show, which to me, I always feel like that's not true because you need a context. And even when we're just showing our montages and stuff like that, those are hopefully just refreshers of things that you probably saw when you were watching CNN in the gym on the treadmill, or you were listening to it in your car or something like that. And so because those are so important to us, we really have to work hard to make sure that whatever we're writing sort of comes off of that. And every now and again, there's a moment where we can kind of joke around and goof off. And in that moment when John Oliver and I were both sort of saying, is it, over and over again, that was us kind of just stretching it out and playing around a little more than was planned.
and we loved it. That was really great. We've got listeners calling in for you, Wyatt. Mark in Cookeville, Tennessee, you're on the air with Wyatt Cenac. Hi, Mark, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask if he and John or Tom Oliver take risks or try to push to see if they can make John Stewart crack up on the air just to see if they can do it.
Yeah. Do you have that freedom, Wyatt?
Yeah, and that is one of the fun things to try to kind of make him giggle. And we'll do stuff like that. You don't want to do it all the time, but there was something I did maybe a week or two ago. We'd done this thing where we were in Iowa for the straw poll, and so I was supposed to be eating this jelly that Rick Santorum had made, and so all I was supposed to be doing was eating it, and I knew that I could probably get a laugh out of John if I just smeared it all over my face. And so every now and again, I'll do, like, we can do stuff like that where it's just like, if he's not expecting it, it's fun to kind of make him break. And so that was something where I think he didn't even notice. And so I very quickly kind of just mashed it on my face. And then when he saw me on the monitor, I think he wound up losing it for a little bit.
How does that work? Do you build in time in the show with the expectation that things are going to get crazy, they're going to go off script? Do they have to drop something else if you smash more jelly on your face and John cracks up for 30 seconds? I mean, there are, as I know well from this medium, there are breaks coming and there are hard time outs. How's it come together?
There are hard time outs, and so you do want to be cognizant of that. Sometimes that means maybe we'll take time out of the interview. So if the interview was scheduled for 5 minutes, maybe they do 4.5 to sort of make up for something. Because sometimes what will happen is John will even sort of go on a run about something, or if something's working, he might take it a little bit further. So we'll sort of build in things. Sometimes after we tape everything, we might have to cut something out here or there just to bring it down to time. But we're always very, very aware of that.
Ellen in Medway, Massachusetts. You're on the air with Wyatt Cenac.
Hi, Tom.
Hi,
hi, Wyatt.
Hi, Ellen.
You know, it's really interesting to me. You know, you're on the Daily Show, but do you ever feel like people are treating you more like you're a politician or a news commentator now as opposed to a comedian, because you're on this show that gets so much press on, you know, MSNBC and Fox News? Do people approach you differently now?
That's interesting.
Trying to talk politics?
Yeah. What do you say, Wyatt?
Sometimes they do. And it's weird because, yeah, like you said, we are a comedy show. I think a lot of times what will happen is people will often say, what you guys are doing is so important. And that's often a very strange thing to hear. It's flattering in one sense, but something that I think for us, we don't want to get too caught up in, because it shouldn't be. We're just making a comedy show. The fact that sometimes people look at things we did on our show and say, oh, wow, that was really impressive. I think there was something that John did last Thursday about sort of taxing the poor and this idea of the sort of class warfare. And and the idea that if we were to raise taxes on the top 2% by, I think, a percentage point, it would equal the exact same amount that I think people were talking about wanting to tax the poor, $700 billion. And it's a very it was a very well done piece. I actually didn't work on that. Two other writers, Hallie Haglin and Joe Miller, I think, worked on that with one of our producers, Jimmy Don. And they worked on that, and it was and it was funny, and it was smart. And unfortunately, I think sometimes for us, our goal is, yeah, we like it to be smart, but at the end of the day, we also want it to be funny. Whereas hopefully the news networks, what they're doing should be smart and should be illuminating things in our political world and in our society. That's not necessarily always the case, and that's unfortunate. And so it's a very strange thing, I think, when people put import on our show beyond the comedy aspect and sort of treat us in a way beyond that. Because, yeah, at the end of the day, we do just want to make people laugh. We are a show where our lead-in is Tosh.0, which makes people laugh. The thing that comes after us is the Colbert Report that makes people laugh. So if we're not making people laugh, it's weird that we're on a network called Comedy Central.
Yeah, well, want to make people laugh, but I want to ask you about this. I'm not sure it's still so strange that people look at the show as more than that, but we've got listeners right on this point. Nashville, Seth, you're on the air with Wyatt.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Wyatt.
Hey,
Seth. I want to ask you, Wyatt, you've got a large pool when it comes to 24-hour cable networks to satirize, and you satirize by day, but I wonder when you get home and you've seen the way, like you mentioned the black cloud earlier, the way things are taken out of context pretty regularly. When you get home after your day of satirizing, doesn't it depress you that the 24-hour cable news networks seem to take everything out of context, the way they highlight things that really aren't important and don't get into the things that are?
It is. It's tough. There are days where we'll go through morning meetings, and our morning meeting lasts about an hour, and we'll watch footage of just various things that had sort of happened between when we taped our last show and that next morning. And yeah, it's very sad sometimes and very disturbing just seeing, oh, this is the narrative that they're going to run with, and this is what they're going to focus on when there are so many other important things, and to watch them make sort of mountains out of molehills a lot of time. It's weird, it's tough. And I think the way that we all kind of deal with it is by making fun of it and you know, trying to find the humor in it, you know, in some ways laughing to keep from crying. So I think that's kind of what we do. When the weekend hits, or like right now we're on hiatus for the next 2 weeks, I don't watch anything, just to kind of clear my head. I'll catch up on all the awful TV shows that I had been saving on my DVR, and various other interesting things I've taped, or movies or something like that.
Yeah.
Just to kind of flush my brain.
No cable TV for a couple of weeks, and what a relief that must be. You feast on it so much of the time, but it's not always so serious. Here's a little bit, Wyatt. You and Swedish social democratic politician Leif Pagrotsky. This is back in April of 2009.
So we'll play a little game. You say one thing that's great about Sweden, like one word, and then I'll say one thing that's great about America.
Okay. Free healthcare.
Grey's Anatomy.
Free education.
Pro football.
Ingmar Bergman.
Twitter.
Absence of American banks.
Snuggie.
Midnight Sun.
Baconaise.
What is that?
It's mayonnaise and bacon mushed together as a wonderful spread.
Okay. Even when it's funny, it's serious. They got free healthcare. We've got Grey's Anatomy. Paul in Concord, Vermont. Paul, you're on with Wyatt Cenac.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Wyatt.
Very well. Hi.
Hey, Paul.
There's two frames I'd like to talk about. The first is the frame of racism in the country, that we live in a highly racialized society, And so because of that, those of us that are white have been taught not to see ourselves as racialized. And so there's the assumption that when white comedians are doing work or white writers are writing, it's writing or it's comedy. It's not about race.
Mm-hmm. It's just regular.
Without an understanding mm-hmm. that is, you know, that our frame has been completely influenced by our development within this racialized society. And I think that that gets missed all of the time. So when Toni Morrison writes a novel, it's a novel about race. But when a white writer writes a novel, it's a novel. And, you know, I kind of jokingly said during the Sotomayor my ear hearings that I was really proud to be a white man because clearly my group has no, you know, we're completely neutral.
You're right.
The other comment is I appreciate the work you did around the Rick Perry comment, but I think it's more complicated than that. There's a lot of scholarship about the meanings of the word black and white. Winthrop Jordan wrote about a seminal book a number of years ago looking at the history and the meanings of black and the meanings of white in our language. And I'm not at all saying that Rick Perry intended to say that in any way, but the meme is there. When Ronald Reagan opened his campaign in 1980, he opened it up in Philadelphia, Mississippi. During the last election, In the Clinton campaign, Geraldine Ferraro made a comment about, you know, we know who we're talking about, these white working class folks in Pennsylvania. And the meme there is the affirmative action meme, and we're going to hire a black, you know, all of that's there. And whether it's intended or not, it has meaning. And so Black Cloud goes out into an environment where we have people putting, you know, showing the president with a bone in his head or watermelons growing on the White House lawn. It does have meaning, whether it's intended or not.
Paul, let me take it to Wyatt Cenac. Wyatt, how about it? I mean, do you, Paul's right, white comedians have had anyway, the freedom to sort of just imagine themselves as the neutral norm. Do you envy that? You know, envy Jon Stewart in that way even maybe? Or, I mean, here you are, you kind of look multicultural all over the place. Maybe you're becoming the new norm in our demographically changing country.
I don't know. I mean, for me, I guess, I don't necessarily envy envy anybody else's position. I think it may be slight arrogance on my part, but I just assume that my experience is as much the American experience as anybody else's. And my father was an immigrant who came here from Grenada. My mother's from the States. But I look at that as, oh yeah, that's as much the American experience. People who came to this country looking for a better life, looking for opportunity, that's part of the American experience. I grew up as any, you know, high school kid where I went to high school. The music I might have listened to, you know, I listened mainly to hip hop, which maybe most people didn't at that time. But it was something that, to me, I still looked at it all as sort of, oh yeah, I grew up with a very American experience. So I think for me, I don't necessarily put that out there. I'm aware of it that, yeah, the neutral is sort of the norm where everyone, you kind of, when you think of the American experience, you think of, you know, sort of middle class white family, nuclear family, 2.5 kids and a dog and the white picket fence and all those types of things. But I guess I grew up in a time where it seemed like America was changing and everyone was staking a claim to their own American experience. And in that way, I think I'm very much aware that everybody has their own unique experience. And I think that's to me what I feel like the American experience is now, that my childhood isn't like yours, but there might be some similar threads that you can relate to this. We can all relate to feeling awkward in high school or not getting a job we wanted. It's just the difference of, you know, maybe that job was being a banker or it was being a backup dancer for MC Hammer.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Daily Show correspondent and writer Wyatt Cenac about life and work in the Jon Stewart world, in the American world, and his new Comedy Central special, Wyatt Cenac, Comedy Person. joins us today from New York City, and it's great to have him here in his Comedy Central special released to DVD yesterday. Weizenek admits to loving cat videos on YouTube, one in particular in which a cat jumps in and out of a box. That's it. But he was surprised to learn that President Obama's YouTube videos get only a fraction of the views that the box-jumping cat gets.
That's embarrassing. Like, I feel so bad for him that I feel like anytime he's in town, I just want to run behind him with some cats and some boxes. Like, just throw him in the background. Don't tell him, but just let them hang out in the background and do their thing, because their approval rate never goes down.
Helping out the president, those cat jumping in and out of boxes, YouTubes get a lot of online comments. Here's a bit from the special where one has caught Weizenek's eye, a comment saying the cat was a cute and then N-word cat. Now, there was no reason to use that word except, well, here's why.
If the box represented the duality of trying to live in a homogenized society while at the same time struggling to hold on to your fragmented cultural identity... And because those two worlds are constantly in conflict, you must jump between them.
Jumping cats and cultural metaphysics. Let's get a call right here for you, White, from Savannah, Georgia. Ed, you're on the air with Weizenek.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, you're on.
Hey, I'm a big fan of Wyatt and The Daily Show, and also On Point. I just wanted to ask Wyatt, you know, maybe it's kind of a softball question, but I just wanted to know some of his like comedic influences throughout growing up. And also, he mentioned he likes to watch dumb TV like the rest of us, maybe some of his favorite of the dumb TV shows. Thanks.
Okay, sure. Thanks, right. Ed. Wyatt, what about it?
I'll start with the dumb TV shows.
And you're a defender of TV, I might say, having seen your
special.
Yeah,
no, I watch a lot of, like, I watch Top Chef a lot, which I was never a big reality show person, although I got, like, hooked in for a little while, and I found myself watching, like, the Flavor of Love shows and the Rock of Love shows because them so fascinating in this weird, terrible way. And I knew they were terrible. And I knew it was like eating donuts or something like that, like just having Krispy Kreme for dinner. But I just got like so sucked in to the lives of these women who were fighting for the perceived love of two guys that didn't really seem to do too much on their end to sort of make a case for why these women should be going after them as insanely as they were. As far as my comedic influences, when I was growing up, it started with Bill Cosby and Bill Murray, I think, were the two people that I initially saw. I saw Bill Murray on Saturday Night Live, and I saw Bill Cosby, and my grandmother used to give me Bill Cosby books. Like, she gave me, like, Bill Cosby's himself when I was really little, and I read that, and I remember thinking how funny they were, and my grandmother would, she'd watch I Love Lucy with me, and so I saw like, those three people, I think, initially, and thought, like, they're really funny, and that seems like a really fun thing to do. And then as I got older, you know, I think people that I started to look at more, I started to look at people like Jerry Seinfeld and people like Chris Rock and Louis C.K. and Zach Galifianakis. And as I moved to California, I then got to see some of those people in person and see them perform, people like Zach and Sarah Silverman and Patton Oswalt, and then even just my own contemporaries that I came up with, people like Kyle Kinane and Matt Bronger and Jasper Redd and Jen Kirkman. And there's so many really talented and funny people that I either was a fan of before I moved out to California, or then when I was living in California, I got to be around. And even now, going and doing shows, that's sort of the fun thing, is I'm still a fan of so many people, and I still, when I get to do a show and do a show I just did a show with these two comedians, Leo Allen and Jesse Klein, and who are people that I've known for a long time, and there were other people, Joe Mandy was on that show as well, and Eddie Brill, and it's fun to be around other comedians and sort of see what they're doing, and it inspires you to want to go and like, oh wow, that was amazing. I want to go and I want to write more. And so there's so many people that I look at and that I look to as people who still inspire me and make me want to be a funnier person and sort of make this exciting for me.
Are there comedians who you see as, I don't know, anti-heroes or the style that you don't want to be? Are there big name comedians you look at and say, that's great, but that's not for me. That's not for Wyatt Cenac.
I don't think I try to get too far into that. I think everybody's got their own particular style. And there's room in the world for all of us. I might not be like X comedian and I might not be like Y or Z comedian, but I don't want to hate on them for what they do because they don't necessarily want to be like me. And we don't have to be. People enjoy comedy. And I think to shut down somebody and say, oh, what that person does is terrible, that may or may not be the case, but an audience goes to see it, and there's an audience that appreciates it. And I feel like it's not just disrespectful to that comedian, but it's also disrespectful to their audience to say, you as people, you don't know what funny is. You're stupid in some way because you laugh at this person and you don't laugh at me. I feel like getting caught up in that, that's too much of a distraction.
Jill, in Natick, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Wyatt Cenac. Jill.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
And Wyatt, I'm so thrilled to talk to you.
Hi, Jill.
I wanted to say that I've been so depressed with the politics and everything else that's going on that I can't get through the day without watching your show. And
thank you.
I had a question.
thank you. That's just great.
Oh, good.
So well, depressed.
It's
true. Okay.
It's very true. But sorry. I had a question. I was wondering, how much does Jon Stewart run the show? Is he a big part of what goes on in the show?
Oh, yes. It's his show. He's there for all parts of it. Like I said earlier in the show, we start our day around 9:30, and we have a morning meeting where we kind of look at things that we could cover for the day. And John is in that meeting. He's very much the editor in chief, where he looks at the stories. We might have 5 or 6 possible things we could do.
Mm-hmm.
He sees the 2 or 3 that he feels like he wants to address and the ones that are, you know, that he finds sort of most amusing and the most sort of prescient for the day. And then some writers will go off and write a draft. He'll look at that draft. He'll give notes. There'll be a rewrite that he'll have already kind of started planting the seeds for. That rewrite happens. He'll do tweaks on that. We'll do a rehearsal. By, like I said, 3:30, 4 o'clock, we rehearse.
Mm-hmm.
After that rehearsal, that's really just his opportunity to kind of say some of those things, to see the montages that have been cut by the producers. He'll go back and he'll do a rewrite where it's just him. If there's a correspondent involved, then we'll be in there. But mainly just him, the head writer, the 2 executive producers, are the 4 of them sort of working together to just rewrite the show. And sometimes he'll do a rewrite that'll be a page 1 rewrite. And things have just changed over the course of the day, or even as he said it aloud, that he's decided he wants to kind of change it. Sometimes maybe only a line or 2 gets changed.
Do you resent that degree of Jon Stewart control or not?
Do I resent it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
no.
you're in there working, he rewrites it. Is that a bummer for you or just the way it is?
No, I think I think in a weird way, it's a goal. Like he's worked hard enough that he has earned that right. And yeah, there are moments where you kind of think, oh, I wrote that funny joke. I wish it would have gotten in. But at the same time, there's also a part of me that's like, I hope to one day be in a position where I have that type of creative control. I think that's one of the tough things about television and film is that, especially if you're someone, whether you're a writer or an actor or anything, or director, you always, I think, going into it, think you have all this creative control where you can do whatever you want. And that's so rare. John is one of the few people who have a show or a production that they really do get to control. They get to build the ship, they get to sail the ship, and they get to take it to its destination. So many other times you have something and it may be your show, your name may be on it, but there are network notes that you have to incorporate, and there are ad buyers that you have to consider, and there's so many outside forces that can change your ship into something unrecognizable, and it's gone from being this beautiful clipper ship into a submarine, and you're like, I didn't want to pilot a submarine. I wanted a ship with the wind blowing through my hair. And that's and so to me, I think it's something that I look at and I say, you know, I would love to be in that situation one day where I could do that. And I think the show does a good job of creating a collaborative environment that, while your joke might not get on, there's still, you know, you're still involved in the process. And he, you know, it is his show, but there is still a good amount of praise to be passed around to everybody, from writers all the way down to the PAs.
Wyatt, you're a good team player. And John Stewart and me, lucky guys. Jill, thanks for that call. Let me get another one. Chad in North Canaan, Connecticut. Chad, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Question. I've been watching The Daily Show for a very long time. I absolutely love it. But it kind of hurts to hear you, Wyatt, and Mr. Stewart say things like, we're just a comedy show, we're just fake news, when it's there's more meat on the bone than that. You are raising political awareness. You are pointing out the absurdities that need to be pointed out. Why the resistance? Why you know, take a step back and, oh, no, we're just a comedy show.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, Chad. Our time is short, but let us pick it. Thank you so much for that. Wyatt, how about it? I mean, I have to agree with Chad. It sounds to me like a dodge. Yes, you want to be funny, but when you say, oh, we're just making a comedy show, nobody believes that anymore. Surely you don't either.
No, I still believe it, because I think I look at Lenny Bruce, Mort Saul, Dick Gregory, were all comedians, all people who, Richard Pryor as well, all people who were sort of making comments about society and coming from a place that was, taking stances, whether they were political or social, and bringing those to light. And they were political satirists. And I think that's what we have seen ourselves as. And I think part of it is, the moment we start thinking of ourselves beyond that, then we're not doing comedy anymore. The moment we start focusing on what influence we may or may not have, that's not doing comedy.
But there's Jon Stewart on the National Mall. On the National Mall. That's not exactly a comedy show. And the line gets awfully thin many nights, I guess, here. But on the other hand, if you've got this exalted understanding of what comedy is, of comedic satire is, maybe you're right.
Yeah, and I think that's, to put that on us, I think it's different perhaps because we have this outlet that somebody like Lenny Bruce didn't have, or somebody like Mort Saul, you know, they didn't have shows like that. Pat Paulson didn't have a show like that, you know. Pryor had a variety show where he did delve into some of those types of things. But they weren't as, I think none of them were on the air as long as our show has been, and sort of taken up in the way that the news media has sort of taken up to showing clips of our show and putting more import on our show. But I think we all see ourselves as in that family and in that lineage, and hoping to, you know, in our own small way, carry the torch of what great political comedians and great political satirists and social commentarians like those people did. And so that's our goal, is at the end of the day, yeah, we hopefully are informing you about things about the world, but we're hopefully also making you laugh about them. People like pundits who go on shows, Rachel Maddow, her job is, she wants to inform, and she wants to inform a particular point of view. We want to make jokes as we inform and make jokes on particular points of views and all points of views. And so I think that's a difference. And that's, you know, I hope to not hurt anybody's feelings in that way. But I think it's the minute we start focusing on anything other than the joke, then we're not telling jokes anymore. We're editorializing. And that's that thin line. That's the thing that you never want to cross. And I think as a political comedian, that's something you never want to cross that, because then, yeah, what's the difference between you and someone running for political office?
Let's hear
you just happen to maybe be slightly more charming at it.
Wyatt, let's hear it straight from the show. After last year's State of the Union address, MSNBC's Chris Matthews said of President Obama, "I forgot he was black tonight for an hour." Wyatt Cenac commented on the media response to the president's speech, criticizing the media for pompous punditry.
"Only by breaking the bonds of this restrictive routine can we hope to ascend to that more perfect ideal of democracy which our forebears so boldly envisioned."
Thank you very much. That was,
Wow, whoa, I'm sorry. I just caught myself in the monitor. I forgot I was black. Wow.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Look at me. I'm black. Pants on the ground. Pants on the ground. Pull up back with your pants on the ground. Pants on the ground.
Wyatt.
Pants on the ground.
Wyatt, I'm sorry, Wyatt. If you could just be post-racial just again for a little moment here.
Issues and plenty of humor there on The Daily Show on Comedy Central. Wyatt Cenac's special, Wyatt Cenac Comedy Person, just out on DVD. Correspondent for The Daily Show and writer there as well. Wyatt, it's been great talking with you this hour. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Wonderful to have you. Good luck with everything. Wyatt Cenac, Comedy Person. Catch it on DVD. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.